on this ninth day of February 2011 in San Diego. We are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are still in chapter 18, the perfection of renunciation. We are on text 55. 18:55. Bhaktya mam abhijanati. Yavan yaschasmi tatpatah. Tato mam tatpato gatva. Vishati tadanantaram. One can understand me as I am, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of me by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and his plenary portions cannot be understood by mental speculation, nor by the non-devotees. If anyone wants to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he has to take to pure devotional service under the guidance of a pure devotee. Otherwise, the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead will always be hidden. As already stated in the Bhagavad Gita 7:25, Naham Prakasha Sarvasya. He is not revealed to everyone. No one can understand God simply by erudite scholarship or mental speculation. Only one who is actually engaged in Krishna consciousness and devotional service can understand what Krishna is. University degrees are not helpful. One who is fully conversant with the Krishna science becomes eligible to enter into the spiritual kingdom, the abode of Krishna. Becoming Brahman does not mean that one loses his identity. Devotional service is there, and as long as devotional service exists, there must be God, the devotee, and the process of devotional service. Such knowledge is never vanquished, even after liberation. Liberation involves getting free from the concept of material life. In spiritual life, the same distinction is there, the same individuality is there, but in pure Krishna consciousness. One should not mistakenly think that the word Vishate enters into me supports the monist theory that one becomes homogeneous with the impersonal Brahman. No. Vishate means that one can enter into the abode of the Supreme Lord in one's individuality to engage in his association and render service unto him. For instance, a green bird enters a green tree not to become one with the tree, but to enjoy the fruits of the tree. Impersonalists generally give the example of a river flowing into the ocean and merging. This may be a source of happiness for the impersonalist, but the personalist keeps his personal individuality like an aquatic in the ocean. We find so many living entities within the ocean if we go deep. Surface acquaintance with the ocean is not sufficient. One must have complete knowledge of the aquatics living in the ocean depths. Because of his pure devotional service, a devotee can understand the transcendental qualities and the opulences of the Supreme Lord in truth. As it is stated in the 11th chapter, only by devotional service can one understand this. The same is confirmed here. One can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead by devotional service and enter into his kingdom. After attainment of the Brahma-Buddha stage of freedom from material conceptions, devotional service begins by one's hearing about the Lord. When one hears about the Supreme Lord, automatically the Brahma-Buddha stage develops. And material contamination, greediness and lust for sense enjoyment, disappears. As lust and desires disappear from the heart of a devotee, he becomes more attached to the service of the Lord. And by such attachment, he becomes free from material contamination. In that state of life, he can understand the Supreme Lord. This is the statement of Srimad Bhagavatam also. After liberation, the process of bhakti or transcendental service continues. The Vedanta Sutra 4.1.12 confirms this. A prayanat tatrapi hidrishtam. This means that after liberation, the process of devotional service continues. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, real devotional liberation is defined as the reinstatement of the living entity in his own identity, his own constitutional position. The constitutional position is already explained. Every living entity is a part and parcel, fragmental portion of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, his constitutional position is to serve. After liberation, this service is never stopped. Actual liberation is getting free from misconceptions of life. Om Gyanam Timiram Basya Gyanandana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So, anyone who has been studying Bhagavad Gita for some time or been in touch with Srila Prabhupada's purports and his lectures will be familiar with this verse. One of his favorite verses to quote, because it really embodies so much of what Krishna consciousness is about, what the bhakti yoga is about. And that is that... Are we at peace, Steve?
Sorry, okay, all right,
I understand. So, the first statement here, bhakti amam abhijanati, one can know me only through devotional service. So imagine a great personality, someone who's very powerful, in a position of, great wealth in society. So a lot of people want to know this person for their own benefit, you know. Bill Gates probably has a lot more email messages trying to get through to him than I do, you know, and people wanting to see him. So there has to be a barrier, otherwise you'd be overwhelmed, right? But if he wants to see someone, then it's usually pretty easy, you know, because he has all this power and all this influence, and it's tejas, as you will, as it's called in Sanskrit. So the greatest person, the supreme person, has this similar barrier. And the fact is that he reserves the right of not being understood or being seen to those who do not approach him in the proper way. And that proper way is really through submission and devotion. You cannot conquer the inconceivable, infinite, you know, all-powerful personality by an attitude of challenge or doubt or skepticism or whatever. We're infinitesimal, you know. We're so tiny in compared to this infinite being. And so the only thing he responds to is love and devotion. And we can see that we can understand something about the Supreme by studying ourselves. And isn't it true that if there's somebody really likes you, then that kind of opens a channel there. You respond to them. If someone likes you, then immediately that you're going to pay attention to them. Because we act on the basis so much of emotion and feelings, and there's a natural affinity that develops. And we can see that naturally between, say, family members, especially parents and children. The children, more than food practically, the children need affection, they need love. Isn't it? If a child doesn't get that, he just dries up. He doesn't develop. It's nightmarish. I'll put it on pause. So, a child grows and it develops from that loving exchange with the mother, and then everything happens. Similarly, the mother is also feeling great happiness, getting the child reciprocation. Now, in his perfection, we find this, of course, in Krishna Leela, in Krishna's pastimes. He also responds reciprocally, which he says right in the fourth chapter, to however anyone approaches him. That as they approach me, surrender unto me, I respond reciprocally. And this means that if someone has a mood of devotion to me, pure devotion, then I will reveal myself to them proportionately. That's the idea. University degrees are not helpful. Our own speculative mind, you know, is constantly changing, and it is so limited. This is one of the basic principles. Go back to the beginning of the Gita, second chapter, verse 7. When Arjuna was giving so many arguments based on the Vedas as to why he wasn't going to fight this battle. But finally, he recognizes his position, and he says, "Karpanidosho pahatasso bhava prichami tvam dharma samudha cheta." My intelligence, cheta, is bewildered about what real dharma is, and dharma should concern us, because dharma is a way in which we can progress in life to the ultimate goal. Without dharma, it is simply animal life. We have to live. We're going to be impelled to do something by the demands of the senses, demands of the mind. But if that's all we are, then we're not any better than the animals. There's a verse, Hito Badesh. Ahara nidra bayamaita nancha samanya neta pashabhya samana dharma hitesho adhiko vishesho dharma nahina pashabhya samana. That we share these four things with the animals, the eating, the sleeping, the mating, and defending. It doesn't matter if we do it in a very advanced way, a very technologically advanced way. It's still eating, it's still sleeping, it's still mating, and it's still defending. The animals have their crude way of doing it. And this verse says, the distinguishing quality of the human being is dharma. And we'll explain what dharma means according to the Vedic understanding. Without dharma, we are not different from the animals, in essence. So therefore, dharma should concern us if we want to progress as human beings. It's very, very much prominent in the Mahabharata. What is the right thing to do? You know, where does dharma reside? And the whole conversation, as well as the battle, is going to be taking place on Kurukshetra, which is a dharma kshetra. That's the very first word of the Bhagavad Gita. Dharma kshetra, Kurukshetra. So since it is a place of dharma, therefore the side upon where dharma resides, personified in the form of Krishna, will prevail ultimately. And that was, Dhritarashtra knew that internally. But back to our verse here. So what is this dharma that Arjuna is concerned about? How to reach the ultimate good, the nikshreyasa. Today I learned for the first time, you know, you'd think I would know this by now because Prabhupada uses the phrase, samam bonam. Samam bonam, I always took to be the essence of it's the supreme good. That's what it means literally in Latin. The supreme good, that's the title of the 10th canto. Reaching the supreme good. In Sanskrit, nikshreyasa, the ultimate good. You know, Plato had it, what is the good with a capital G? What is the best that we can do for ourselves and for everyone else? That's a question. The answer is not so obvious, right? I mean, if we try to figure it out ourselves, we can't do it. So Arjuna recognized that and he accepted his role as a shishya, as a disciple of Krishna, rather than just a friend. Because friends argue back and forth and they can't really come to the conclusion. So the ultimate dharma is now being explained. This is the conclusion now of the 18th chapter, which itself is a kind of a summary of what's gone before. So Krishna is speaking very plainly here. And the idea is that we want to enter. We want to enter into this kingdom of God. What is the advantage over this world? The advantage is that everything is eternal there. It's full of bliss, ultimate happiness, and knowledge or awareness. Satchitananda life. So compare what we have now. You know, we're certainly not full of bliss all the time. I don't know about you, but this material world is, according to Krishna, dukkhalayam. Right? There's so many dangers, there's so many unhappinesses. You know, at any moment. They say there's a whole group of people who are doubting the climate change thing, right, for their own reason. It reminds me of what happened when the cigarettes were, you know, everyone was puffing on cigarettes. You don't know now. But in the 40s and 50s, and I grew up in the early 60s, that everyone did that. That's just what you were when it was a rite of passage, you know. And meanwhile, you know, the doctors are seeing all of these cases. Certainly it's bad for your health, causes cancer, emphysema. Yeah. No. You had this big, you know, the conglomerates was paying these doctors to put an argument and doubt in people's mind. There's no clear evidence that, you know, cigarettes. Until finally, you know, it was obvious. You know, you have to put it on the package. You know. So, in a similar way, there's today a great vested interest in coming to the conclusion that we're ruining the planet by burning all these fossil fuels. So you have government paid and industry paid scientists, you know, making writing papers and confusing the issue. But no one can deny, I mean, if you're around for a few years, that the weather has gotten very extreme. Right here in San Diego, you know, if you walk through this portcullis, whatever they call it, in the patio, suddenly we have the nice fragrant Maltese blooming that we can offer to the deities. I don't know if you noticed that. The very nice flower. It's not supposed to be like that in February, I'm sorry. But you notice how we had this summer weather? We never had this before. This is not, you know, it's nice for a while. I just wonder what summer's going to be like. Maybe it's going to be 95. But it's unseasonal. And all over the country, blizzards, you know. Australia, record-breaking typhoon, you know. Everywhere you look, you know, this unusual weather. Too much, record-breaking, this and that. So the idea is that by our own, great intelligent minds are putting their minds to it. And, you know, they're coming to the conclusion that, well, it hasn't really been shown that it's, you know, in other words, we can't figure it out on our own. And we need superior guidance. And Krishna is providing it here. And the conclusion that he's coming to is that devotional service is the way that he's revealing. Devotional service is the way that I can be known because I will reveal myself to such a person. Now, Lord Rama came to the same conclusion. There are many verses like this. Prabhupada quotes one from the 11th canto, Bhakti-atunanyashakya ahamevangvadojana. After showing the universal form, Krishna says, I can be understood as I am standing here, as in my more attractive two-armed form, only by undeviating devotional service. In the 14th chapter, 10th canto, Prabhupada would love to quote this verse. Because here's Brahma, who's the most intelligent in the universe. He's the first created being. He engineers everything. Can you imagine what kind of intelligence it takes to just figure out how to build a human body? How, you know, and all these other bodies? They're extremely complicated machines. You know, they're just material. And this is Brahma's intelligence. How to make everything work in this world. You know. But even he was bewildered by Krishna, by little baby, little child Krishna. It didn't make any sense to him. And I can easily understand why. Now here's Brahma dealing with vast lengths of time and power, the whole universe, energy. He knows that he's appeared from the body of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, you know. Great, you know, inconceivable presence and power. And now this little child with the flute in his hand, on one hand, and a little yogurt and fruit in the other, with a bunch of calves and friends, he's supposed to be the origin of Mahavishnu, who's the origin of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu from whom I took birth? Doesn't compute. You know. So he had this whole pastime where he challenged Krishna. And after doing that by stealing his calves, and he finally saw that, yes, he is really Narayan, the Supreme Narayan. And he spoke these wonderful prayers in chapter 14 of the 10th canto. Now one of them is similar to this. He says to little Krishna, he's offering his prayers, Atapite deva padam bhajadvaya prasara leshanugrita evahi gyanatvi tattvam. The very word tattva keeps coming up. Gyanatvi tattvam bhagavan mahimno tachandya eko kichadam vichinvan. Exactly the themes that Prabhupada is in the purport. So he says, my dear Lord, if one gets a little mercy of your lotus feet, which only comes through service, we're back to bhakti, see, can one understand your glories in truth? Otherwise, speculating or studying the Vedas for millions of years, you cannot understand. This is Lord Brahma speaking, who should know. He's the head of our sampradaya, right? So the same thing is true here. If we want to know who we are, we want to know who the Supreme Lord is, and we want to know how to act for our best benefit, we have to approach in the right way. And we have to approach Krishna, and we have to approach his representative. Because again, the word bhakti is there. Without the mercy or the favor of one who is dear to the Lord, we cannot enter into this process of bhakti. This is the way Krishna works it. Just like you want to see the great man, you can't see him, you know. But if you're friends with one of his intimate friends, you can get you in. It's called influence peddling. There's a whole science of it. I can't know these congressmen and everything. But somebody who's close to them will, you know, if I give a little something, you know, they'll introduce me, and then I can place my, you know. So this is the way the world works. Well, it works that way for the Supreme Person, too. He has those who are dear to him, who have become dear through devotion. And if they give you some favor, you know, if you get their mercy, as it were, then you can begin to know who God is. We say, sing every morning, Yasyat Pasara, Bhagavat Pasara, Yasya Pasara, Nagati Katobi. That by the prasad, by the grace of the guru, spiritual master, one can get the grace of Krishna. But without such grace of the guru, there's no means of advancement. There's no means of advancement. No matter how much yoga you do, how much you study, how much you pay, how strong you are, that doesn't work. You have to take that humble position and serve and hear. Mostly hear. That's the first service. To hear in the proper frame of mind and to put that hearing into action. And then one can understand Krishna in truth. What's the advantage? Knowing Krishna, one can enter into that kingdom of God. It's as simple as that. So let's just review the purport really quickly. This is a very important verse of purport, so I've kind of dwelled on it. The non-devotees have no access. He declares in 725, Naham Prakasha Sarvasa Yoga Maya Samavata. Those who are covered by the illusory potency, he's not visible to them. They may read the book, they may see the deity, they may see the devotees, but it doesn't click. You know? That's just the externals. Until you enter into the mood of devotion, nothing happens. So he probably repeats, and he makes it clear, Vishate doesn't mean that you lose your identity. Spiritual self-realization, perfection, doesn't mean losing your identity. We are eternally individual souls. Mamayavangsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. This is another verse Prabhupada quote all the time in the 15th chapter, 15:7. Krishna says, all of us are part and parcel. He is a supreme conscious being, infinite. We are infinitesimal conscious beings, eternally. But he's providing for everyone. He's creating. He's infinite. We're infinitesimal. He's the ocean. We're the drop. You know. But we have the same quality. We have the same quality of consciousness, of activity, of love, of personality. We will never lose it. So vishate doesn't mean that you merge and you lose your individuality. It means that you enter into that world where there's no inebriety. Prabhupada used this word. There's no death, there's no birth, there's no change, there's no misery. There's simply eternal exchange of loving devotion with Krishna. Now, Prabhupada also brings up the point of the definition of mukti. Mukti is often taken to mean merging, losing your individuality, and simply becoming an eternal conscious being. But that's not what mukti is according to the Bhagavad Purana, the Srimad Bhagavatam. Mukti hit vanyata rupam swarupena vivastatihi. That mukti is defined as giving up other forms. This is a very instructive half a verse. Anyata rupam means other rupas. Rupa is essential. The Supreme has rupa, form, activities, pastimes, name. We also have rupa, eternally. But now we're inhabiting other forms. These are artificial forms. Even in this one lifetime, we've had so many forms. We've all had a 5-year-old form, 10, 15, 20. Maybe you haven't got to 20 yet. But 19-year-old. But the point is, it's constantly changing. Who can deny it? These are all many forms. So who has the form? That's we, as spirit soul, have our original form. These are coverings, just like you have your own coat. This, I think, is finally gone. You know, now I'm going to have to get a new sweatshirt. But it's, Vasangsi Jirani Yatavihai. Just like if you have an old coat, you give it up. No big deal, you get another one, you know. So you have an old body, no big deal, you give it up and get an old one. But you don't know that. You think that you are the body. And therefore, the prospect of death is terrifying. But for a realized soul, it's not terrifying. It's just like, hey, like I have an old car, same thing now. I'm going to give it up, get a new car. It's a cause for rejoicing. It's not a cause of lamentation. But if I think, I am the car, it's the only car I'll ever have, you know, this is me, then there's anxiety because it's breaking down. So, hitvanyata rupam swarupena vivastati, and to be situated in one's swarup, one's actual form. What is that swarup? All together now, those who know. Jivera Swarupoi Krishnara Nityadas. This is the declaration of Krishna in the form of Lord Chaitanya. The first question of Sanatana Goswami, he's the ideal spirit, the ideal disciple. He approaches Lord Chaitanya. Although he was extremely learned, he knew Sanskrit, he knew Arabic. You know, he would have known English but he said, I don't know anything. Kami, who am I? Why am I suffering? If I don't know the answer to these questions, then where is my learning? It doesn't mean anything. So he approaches with the strongest teeth. He surrenders to Lord Chaitanya, asks him the question. Lord Chaitanya, you know these already, but you're doing it just formality. But he answers the question. This is the question for all of us, the answer for all of us. The swarup of the living entity is to be an eternal servant of Krishna. And he goes on, we're just like rays of sunshine. You know, we're just like rays emanating from the sun of Krishna. We have the quality of heat and light. We have the quality of consciousness, personality. But now we've lost contact with the sun, and so we're trying to enact that personality in these imaginary forms, these constantly changing forms, which are not our sarup. So that's what mukti means. It means to be reinstated in one's original position as a servant of Krishna. And that can only happen. Prabhupada talks about the Brahma Bhuta stage. Maybe you can tell him it carries. It's Dharma. Just tell him that. Yeah, it's carrying. We have to, the heart has to become purified. In other words, this is a natural state. The swarup means your natural state. Now this is all unnatural. Our hearts, our consciousness is full of desires and lusts and angers in relation to this world. So this bhakti is the natural, healthy state of the living entity. And we're simply trying to get back to that original state by this process of devotional service. Any discussion on these points before we move on? All of these verses now, all the way to 66, are very significant. Yeah.
I have a question. Since the original form of the living entity is to be an eternal individual, so this impersonal liberation of merging, this must be some kind of illusion because it's not who you really are.
It is. It is an illusion. And that's why it's not secure. Someone may, by artificial means, by great austerities, deny the senses and stop the mind. Can you imagine trying to do that? But if you can, and come up to the Brahma Bhuta stage, you know, beyond the modes of nature. But it's not; it can't last. It's just like, you know, the example I came up with this on my own. Because I grew up in New York, so sometimes in the summer it gets very hot and muggy in New York City, you know. And I remember walking in the streets of New York, say walking down Broadway, and there's a movie theater, you know. So you're very hot, you're tired, you know. And you say, okay, I'm going to duck into this movie lobby. It's air conditioned and quiet, you know. And I'll just, you know, this is relief. So you go in there, and it is relief, right? And you hang around, maybe you look at the coming attractions or whatever it is. But you don't, you can't, you know, buy a ticket and go in because you have something outside. So eventually, just being relieved from the heat and the noise and the pollution on the street is not enough. You know, and so eventually you say, I got an appointment, and you go back out there and you're out into it. So it's just like that. This world is a world of misery, birth, old age, disease, and death. Anyone who is intelligent will try to get out of that, if it's at all possible. So since this is the logic of the impersonalist, it is attraction and attachment for these things of this world that produces us coming back again and again. Therefore, I'm going to completely stop the senses. I'm going to stop the mind. I'm not going to feed any of my attachments. And in this way, I'll burn it all out, and I'll become simply a purely conscious being, and there'll be no suffering, because I won't take birth again. You see? And a very few who have the will and the determination can do that. But unfortunately, that's not the natural position of the soul. The soul is not just a negative being who's just conscious that I am that I am. We have a form, as explained, sarup. We have activities. We have qualities. We have a personality, just like we have here, just like Krishna has. And if that personality is suppressed artificially, eventually we'll say, well, the heck with it. I know that there's misery down there, but at least I'll have something to do, you know? At least I'll have some relationship. And so you come down and you do some maybe welfare work and like that, you know? In other words, you cannot restrain it. And that's a verse like that in the 10th canto. So don't even, you know, and as far as mukti is concerned, it comes naturally as a byproduct from bhakti. This famous verse from Krishna Karnamrita, I just heard Prabhupada today on the tape. He says, bhakti strihi stidatara bhagavanyadi syat daivena nakpalati divmi kishora muti mukti svayam mukulitanjali chevate sman dharma takarna gatayak samayak patiksha. So what he's saying there is that if someone is really situated seriously in bhakti, he's speaking to Krishna, bhakti strihi, in relation to you, stidatada, in other words, it's advanced, then you will get the fruit of that bhakti. What is it? Do you get rich? Do you get liberation? No. It's a vision of your beautiful Kishora Murti. It's darshan. It's contact with Krishna. He reveals himself to you. That's the fruit, nothing else, and service to him. So the Kishora Murti is the most delightful form of God. It's Krishna in his most delightful, all-attractive, sweet, original form that we worship on the altar, Krishna in Vrindavan. That's the form he's saying. And as far as Mukti is concerned, she's waiting by the door with the Anjali, Mukulit Anjali, to serve me. And whatever I need of Dharma, Artha, and Kama, they're also ready to serve. You have to have a little something to eat, you take prasadam, okay, it's desire. But it's secondary. It's just an act of service, you see. And so Mukti comes as a byproduct. Why strive for something that you can get free, you know, in the process of getting the most valuable thing? So there's no sense in it. All right, let's go on. Sarva kamanya visada.
Sarva kamanya visada.
Kurvano man vipashaya.
Kurvano man vipashaya.
Mat prasada navapnoti.
Mat prasada navapnoti.
Shashvatam padamabhyam. Though engaged in all kinds of activities, my pure devotee, under my protection, reaches the eternal and imperishable abode by my grace. Purport. The word madhvipashriyaha means under the protection of the Supreme Lord. To be free from material contamination, a pure devotee acts under the direction of the Supreme Lord or his representative, the spiritual master. There is no time limitation for a pure devotee. He is always 24 hours a day, 100% engaged in activities under the direction of the Supreme Lord. To a devotee who is thus engaged in Krishna consciousness, the Lord is very, very kind. In spite of all difficulties, he is eventually placed in the transcendental abode or Krishna loka. He is guaranteed entrance there. There is no doubt about it. In that supreme abode, there is no change. Everything is eternal, imperishable, and full of knowledge. So this is the value of reading Srila Prabhupada's books. This is not something theoretical that he's saying here. He's experiencing it, and he's experienced it. Srila Prabhupada himself went through so many difficulties in his mission. In his mission of giving us what we have here. It's all for us. You know, he was doing it for Krishna, and he's doing it for us. It's the same thing, because Krishna is most pleased when we recruit new people for his service. Not that he's, you know, so greedy to be served. He's already being served. But it's for our benefit. And he sees that, there's more souls who are being turned to me who will come back, you see. So someone who can help in that endeavor becomes very dear to the Lord. But that doesn't mean there aren't difficulties. The difficulties are there, and Srila Prabhupada experienced them. You read his biography. But remaining unflinching, 100% engaged. Now you may say, well, that's so difficult, you know. I mean, I have so many things I have to do for myself. How can I do it all, everything for Krishna, 24 hours? But the point is that that life can be arranged in such a way that even your ordinary activities, you know, eating, sleeping, for instance, well, you can eat for Krishna and you can sleep for Krishna. You know, you can sleep for the purpose of getting rest. Body, after all is like a tool or like a facility for service. So it should be taken care of. We don't neglect it, but we don't exaggerate its needs and like that. So therefore, you can eat for Krishna, just like we take prasadam. So prasadam means the grace of the Lord, right? It's been offered with love and devotion, and now he's giving the remnants back and he's taking it. So it's an act of love and devotion. There's nothing uncontaminating about it. In fact, it's highly purifying. Same thing with sleep. If you're sleeping, you know, at the right time, the right amount, to rejuvenate the body and regenerate the body, that's service. And if you're doing it right, you'll be dreaming of Krishna. You know, if you begin to advance in devotional service and being Krishna conscious, glorifying the Lord, working for the Lord, is truly a source of pleasure, which it really is in the higher states, then who wouldn't continue to try to enjoy pleasure 24 hours a day? We try to do it on the sensual platform and see what it gets us. A lot of suffering. But if instead of serving the senses, you serve Krishna's senses, then you're truly happy. Because don't forget, we're part and parcel of Krishna. So when you serve Krishna, you serve your true self. When you serve these senses, you serve your false self. And that's why you can never be happy that way. Because the matter is limited. And that means the senses are limited. And their ability to give you pleasure is limited. You know? And they also can give you pain, which when you're feeling it seems unlimited. You know? So the point is that it's duality. You can never get to a point of constantly enjoying on the material platform. And people who try to do that quickly descend to a hellish existence. That's the drug culture. To heck with all, you know, I can't put it off. You know? I just want to inject happiness right away. And there are drugs that make you feel like, yes, this is it. Now I've got it. Until some time passes and it turns into a living hell. Because it's just material. You're messing with the brain chemistry or something. And the brain is not meant for that. So, but in Krishna consciousness, there is truly no limit because it's spiritual. So the pure devotees, they're enjoying all the time. They're remembering Krishna, glorifying Him, cavorting in the spiritual world. Even internally, while externally they may be doing so many things. This is the higher realms of devotional service. It's not bounded by the material elements that we see around us. So here he's saying that even though you're doing so many things, you know, externally, his pure devotee, under his protection, reaches the eternal and perishable abode by my grace. In other words, there's no reaction. There's no material reaction to keep you here. Good, bad, good karma, bad karma. There's none of that. It's all nice karma. Is it? You're simply working for me. This is what we intelligently we should reflect. This is how we should try to work in this world. That was Srila Prabhupada's mission. So there's no limitation. You know, once you get on the spiritual platform, everything is infinite, ever expanding. You know, we have no experience of it here, but that's reality. Any questions on this verse? Working under Krishna's protection. Okay, here's another key verse we should learn. Chetasa sarva karmani. Mai sanyasya matparaha. Buddhi yogam apashritya. Machitta satatam bhava. Those last four words are practically everything in a nutshell right there. In all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. Purport. When one acts in Krishna consciousness, he does not act as the master of the world. Just like a servant, one should act fully under the direction of the Supreme Lord. A servant has no individual independence. He acts only on the order of the master. A servant acting on behalf of the Supreme Master is unaffected by profit and loss. He simply discharges his duty faithfully in terms of the order of the Lord. Now, one may argue that Arjuna was acting under the personal direction of Krishna. But when Krishna is not present, how should one act? If one acts according to the direction of Krishna in this book, as well as under the guidance of the representative of Krishna, then the result will be the same. The Sanskrit word matparaha is very important in this verse. It indicates that one has no goal in life save and except acting in Krishna consciousness just to satisfy Krishna. And while working in that way, one should think of Krishna only. I have been appointed to discharge this particular duty of Krishna by Krishna. While acting in such a way, one naturally has to think of Krishna. This is perfect Krishna consciousness. One should, however, note that after doing something whimsically, he should not offer the result to the Supreme Lord. That sort of duty is not in the devotional service of Krishna consciousness. One should act according to the order of Krishna. This is a very important point. That order of Krishna comes through the cyclic succession from the bona fide spiritual master. Therefore, the spiritual master's order should be taken as the prime duty of life. If one gets a bona fide spiritual master and acts according to his direction, then one's perfection of life in Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. Now, this thinking of Krishna, we're enjoined here. This one purport is quite amazing. There's only one short paragraph. Prabhupada must have used the word Krishna 20 times in this one purport. So this chanting of the name of Krishna, you know, it's the way this is, sounds, you know, somebody can sound, this is pretty, you know, hard to figure out. Are we supposed to work for Krishna? What about me? So the idea is working for Krishna. The perfect examples always of Krishna consciousness are the gopis in Vrindavan. Now, they were always working. They're working. They're, you know, churning butter. It's an act of life, being a milkmaid. You know, there's so much to do. They're farmers, after all. So there's many chores to do at home, you know. But these are not ordinary milkmaids, you know. These are great sages and yogis and, you know, who have taken birth as milkmaids just because they're Krishna's milkmaids. So what are they doing? How are they, you know, keeping themselves enlivened? Are they thinking, God, this is a tough job, you know, yoga. When is Krishna coming? You know, am I going to be able to dance with Krishna, or is she going to be able to dance? It's not like that. While they're churning the butter, while they're doing their chores, they're in the most exalted state of consciousness, thinking of Krishna, glorifying Krishna. And here's how some of the ways in which they're glorifying Krishna. And remember that this glorification, this description, is non-different from Krishna. So unlike this material world, if I'm describing some scene at the beach, you're not there. You may want to go there and experience it, but you're getting a very pale reflection of what it's really like there. But not so when you describe Krishna. So they begin their description, you know, as they're working at home. Vama baha kutta bama kapolo talgita mbadadarabhita vino koma langa libit ashita margam gopi iri yati yatra makunda vyoma yana vanita saha siddha vismatasta dubadaya salajja kama marga nasamabhita chitta kashmalam yudapasvita nivya. This is their statement. Yeah, please take it over to the side, just a little bit. You can sit right here behind. Yeah, take a chair. That's it. Thank you for coming. So they're describing now. They're experiencing. Their minds are with Krishna out in the forest. He's out in the forest cavorting with his boys, playing with the cows and the monkeys, and playing the flute. He's having a great time. But they're also having a great time because they're remembering and thinking, and they're longing for him. So what are they saying here? The details. God is in the details. Vama bahu, left arm. Vama kapolo, left cheek. So he's got his big flute. I play the flute, so I know. Mm-hmm. You to play this flute, you have like this. You like this. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. You're already playing. So vama bahu kata vama kapolo. Volgita brur. Moving his eyebrows very attractively. He's taken his flute to his very soft lips, and with his soft fingers, komal angulibit, he's stopping the holes. They're living this. They're hearing the flute in their consciousness, you know. And what's happening is that the demigods, they're flying in the sky, and their wives are becoming attracted. They say, oh, you know, this flute sound is so attractive. And they say, let's go down there and listen to Krishna play the flute. And then they go on with the description. There's a whole song. This is one of the songs. And it's one after another. They say, oh, hanta chittama balashunutatam, hara hasu rasistya vidyat. There's a whole song. And they're saying, wow, hanta means, my goodness, Just listen to this, oh friends. Chittam abala. Abala means the those who have weak bodies. This is a word for gentle ladies. Krishna has harahasa. Now the commentators, great scholars, and you know, Rupa Goswami, Sridhar Swami, they give a commentary on this one word, harahasa. They're applying their intelligence to this description of Krishna in the 10th canto. They're not thinking of anything else. So what does harahasa mean? It means three things. Hasa means smile, and hara means a pearl necklace. So it means that, oh, his smile is just like a pearl necklace, very beautiful with those teeth. Or it means that his pearl necklace is reflecting the effulgence of his smile. Or it means that his beautiful pearl necklace is so nice that it's just like a smile. You see? So this way you expand the meaning. So he says, oh, he's playing the flute, and it's so attractive, even to the animals, that at a distance, they're becoming stunned in ecstasy. And they can't even eat the little grass that they have in their mouth. They're just standing there like pictures, or as if they're asleep. And they're in samadhi. Just listen to that flute sound. You know? And it goes on like that. He's playing. He's dressed himself just like a wrestler. You know, and he starts playing the flute, and the river hears. The river is also a person in the spiritual world. And it goes in whirlpools, no more flowing around. And with the waves of its hands, it's waiting, when will the breeze bring us some dust from Krishna's lotus feet? But the gopis say, oh, that river is not very pious, just like us, and we can never see Krishna, and never get that dust. And they go on like this. So while they're doing their chores, they're in complete exalted Krishna consciousness, and they're enjoying like anything. And that's exactly what Krishna says here. You know, do your work, sarva karmani, visada, but do it under my protection, be Krishna conscious, and you will cross over all difficulties. That's the next verse. You know, Krishna will take care of you. So there's unlimited descriptions of Krishna, there's unlimited glorification available. And the essence of it is this Hare Krishna mantra. This Hare Krishna mantra is the source of unlimited happiness, because Krishna's there in his name. But we can't experience that now. It's just some kind of sound, you know. But we should know that if we follow this process, you know, the do's and the don'ts, then our appreciation for the holy name and all other sacred vibrations will grow and grow until it's a source of unending joy and happiness. And it doesn't stop with death. The glorification goes on. It's happening in the spiritual world forever. The bees, kvachit bringi gitam, they're singing. And they're not just singing. It says, this is one you don't know. Vrindavanam divi latapaditam lachast pushpas puritagrabhaja. Pushpanichaspita maru vridani maru vatastashudihari gita. So it says all over Vrindavan there's these beautiful plants. And on these plants are growing these white flowers, very fragrant. And around those flowers there's all these swarms of bees. But they're not just buzzing. They're singing hymns to Krishna that defeat the Vedas. You know? So bees are fully conscious there, much more than we are here. They just happen to take that form of bees because they have to be. There's a necessity for bees in Krishna's Leela. You know, there's all kinds of stuff. So the point is that there's no end to this, and even when you're sitting here, just like we experienced Srila Prabhupada, we knew, you could see, and we learned from the Shastra, he's existing on two planes. You know, internally he's experiencing some of the things I'm explaining to you on a much higher level. Details, Leela, everything. But at the same time, with this completely calm mind, no distraction from sense, you know, objects, he's managing a whole society. He's giving a lecture. You know, he's writing his books. He's dealing with money. He's dealing with legal matters. He's writing. But at the same time, internally, because of this expanded consciousness, he's with Krishna in Vrindavan in his own rupa, swarupa, like that. That's perfection in his life. And there's no let up. It's not that, oh, you know, at one point, you know, the person gets very depressed. And it's never like that. Never like that. You know. Any questions? Go ahead.
I'd like to disagree with that he was always on two different planes, and that he would be totally, what was the word he used? Equipoised. Uh-huh. Because sometimes he had to stop his lectures out of ecstasy.
Stop them?
Yeah, he couldn't finish a lecture. I remember once in...
Oh, yes, yes. Well, sometimes the inner state becomes external, you know. It happened like that, he became so emotional, you know, because of in Atlanta especially, there's this famous place and some other places. Yeah, with Gaurinathai, you know, when he saw the mercy of the Lord manifest before him and all of these, you know, very enthusiastic devotees distributing books, and, you know, it was overwhelming. You know, for some time. So you're right. Sometimes it breaks through, but the idea is that in any case, the internal aspect is always there. There's never just, you know, dull consciousness. There's always that divine consciousness aspect. Sometimes it overwhelms the external ability, but never the other way. Never that the external overwhelms the internal. It seems. Anyone else? Okay. Let's adjourn and get ready for kirtan. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.